Zo, dat was al een nummertje dat over koken ging. Hello, Marta.
Hello.
So, if I understand correctly, you are based in Brussels?
That's right.
But you are obviously, since we are talking English, not from Brussels.
I'm from Italy.
And you are working for the central office of Slow Food, and that's done the European office, or is it worldwide?
It's worldwide. So I'm working for Slow Food International that has its headquarters in a small town in Italy, a town called Bra, which is where the association started back in 1989. And I'm in Brussels representing Slow Food International.
And why do you want to be represented in Brussels? That has to do with the European Union then, I suppose.
Indeed, that's correct. As all other associations working on a European and international level, we also working with European institutions for a long time. And we then got to the point where we could have a person in Brussels. So that's what I'm doing. I'm basically keeping the relationship with the European institutions, the Parliament and the Commission in particular. And that's part of my job. And of course, then that involves a lot of collaborations with other organizations that are also working at European level. And then the other part of my job is that I coordinate the Association of Slow Food in Brussels, in Belgium, sorry. So I basically help coordinate the communication between the local chapters in Belgium and the international headquarters.
Okay, so now I already understand why there was .it in your email address.
Indeed, that's correct. That's why it's still .it, because that's where the headquarters are.
So now we will go a bit into who we are. So Slow Food, it's a word that I've known for a long time, but I thought it was just a general word. I didn't know it was really linked to a worldwide movement. And it has been going on for quite a while, I understand. I saw 86 as the start of it, is that correct?
Indeed, that's when it started as Arcigola in Italy. So it started as a small Italian association. It was really a group of friends who put it together. And in 1989, that's when it was registered as international association, and that's when it took the name Slow Food. And ever since then, it has grown really into a worldwide association with members in more than 150 countries worldwide.
Now, back to 86, was there some specific reason for people to start with this movement?
Yes, that's when also the whole fast food trend started. And it was really in reaction to the opening of a McDonald's in Rome that basically the first seed of Slow Food was born, essentially. It was really out of the wish to go back to our roots, go back to the meaning of food and of eating. And so it was also in as a reaction to this whole fast food, the system that was associated with that.
Okay, so there is a certain style of food that you are against and another style of food that you are for.
Yes, if you want, it's more like it's a type of food and food system more than just food itself, because food always comes from a seed, from somebody who took care of that seed or of that animal, and so it comes from farmers who are working and maintaining the environment. And so it's really a certain kind of food system that we want to promote, and essentially what we want to do is to encourage everyone to understand what the impact of the food choice is on the rest of the community. And so the kind of food system we are very much in favor of is a local food system based on local food biodiversity, know-how, traditions, culture as well, of course. If you talk about how the land is farmed and cultivated, then it's the system that respects the environment and people. So that's why our three keywords are good, clean, and fair food.
Good, clean, and fair.
That's correct. So good to the taste buds, clean in terms of the environment, and fair to produce.
So it really was founded in 1989 then?
Indeed, as an international association. That's when it was formally registered. And then, but bit by bit it kept growing, and now we're really worldwide, very active, with, of course, some countries being more active than others. That's normal, but we have a very strong international network. of people who are promoting through their daily work this kind of food.
Do you have an idea in how many countries you are represented?
Yes, we have members in more than 150 countries worldwide. So it can be any individual person like you and me, or like the people who listen to us on the radio, who can very easily sign up to the association and support the actions we do worldwide. Because besides having local groups who promote the philosophy of good, clean and fair food for different activities, we coordinate a number of projects on the ground, like school gardens, projects to safeguard biodiversity. For instance, we have two such in Belgium to preserve the raw milk Herve cheese. You might have heard about it. It was very much in the news this year because there's just one producer left producing the raw milk version, very traditional cheese.
So it's like animals going extinct, but this is about foods getting extinct.
Indeed, it's about food. It's about vegetable varieties going extinct. For instance, if you talk about apples, if you go to the supermarket, you will always find only types of apples that are from hybrid seeds, whilst in fact there are thousands of apple varieties worldwide, also in Belgium. It's also animal breeds that risk to go extinct because with the industrial system, you know, for instance, big industrial farms prefer the Friesian cow, the cow that produces a lot of milk. It's like the Ferrari of cows in terms of producing milk, and lots of other cow breeds have gone extinct. And yes, so it's all vegetable varieties and animal breeds and food that goes extinct.
But apparently it's also specific preparations that you are worried about, because this cheese dependent on a certain type of milk. It's just a kind of preparation that doesn't exist anymore after some time. How come that such preparations disappear?
It's like, for instance, if we look at the Belgian Herve cheese, until 50 years ago, there were about 500 producers. It was mostly produced in families and households as a way to preserve milk. And bit by bit, the producers gave up, a bit because of the evolution of the food industry, because of the availability as well of food, that cheeses, if you want, that were cheaper. And also in the specific case of the Herve, but that's a problem that also other cheese producers have in Europe and elsewhere. It's also because of the very strict application of hygiene rules that are well adapted to industrial producers and not to artisanal producers. So it's a number of factors that have led to many foods disappearing, one also being the difficulty of a certain transformation process. It's often know-how that is passed on from generation to generation, and it takes a lot of effort. But also if consumers are not ready to pay or do not recognize the value of such a product, and if the producer cannot communicate all the qualities of its product, it's difficult to stay alive in a market where food is becoming cheaper and cheaper.
Yes. Now, two remarks. I did an interview once about, there was this organization that said that the big producers, the big scale producers, enforce legislation with the goal to make it difficult for the small producers and to get them out of the market. Do you think that's realistic? Or?
I wouldn't know that. Of course, I work here in Brussels, so I see what goes on here, and of course, each interest group tries to make the situation beneficial for its own group. So I don't know. Maybe it is that way that the big scale producers are trying to control the whole market, and bit by bit it's actually happening because indeed they're working on such a scale that they're pushing out of the market the smaller producers. Of course, yes, they also influence legislation in such a way that it goes to their advantage. Whether they have in mind of pushing out of the market the other producers, I don't know, but it's competition. I wouldn't know if it's really like that, that they're trying to influence legislation to push the others out of the market. It might well be. The situation is certainly not in favor of the small-scale producers at the moment.
Another question, isn't there also a growing awareness about the well-being of animals? And isn't that the reason that some products go out? I mean, I'm thinking about foie gras. And that's very traditional, but it's not very nice for the geese.
Yeah, indeed. Actually, also Slow Food started working just a few years ago. We confess it. We haven't always been working on animal welfare. but we also started working on that. If you want about that, and there is a broader discussion to be made, because indeed there are many people who are giving up meat or also cheese, meat like animal products like cheese, so because of concern for animals. But what we also try to underline is that basically animals are part of an ecosystem. So, for instance, we have this situation in many mountain areas in Europe where, because of a lower consumption of these high-quality meat products and meat, there is basically whole communities giving up their work as farmers, and so there are less farmers taking care of the mountains, and so you have also environmental problems connected to the fact that there are no farmers in the mountains for the pastures. So, of course, we're very much in favor of higher animal welfare standards, which also means lower meat consumption and better prices in terms of what we pay for the meat, because at times if you look at the price of meat compared to the price of other products, it's really, it's nonsense in a way, it's way too cheap. It cannot justify the whole cost of raising and feeding an animal until it's ready for slaughter. So we're also in favor of lower meat consumption, but we're not in favor of entirely giving up meat consumption.
Mm-hmm. Now, related to that, I think about very different countries from ours. So you say you are active in 158 countries. Is that only Western Europe and North America and Australia, or is it also in Niger and Mali and Bangladesh?
Yeah, it's actually really worldwide. So we have some very active groups, just to give you some concrete examples, in Malawi or in Uganda. In Uganda, we have a very strong network, and actually the vice president of Slow Food International is from Uganda. It's called Edward Muchibi. He's a young agronomist. We have groups in Asia. We're actually organizing at the beginning of November an event called Terra Madre Indigenous, meaning Mother Earth Indigenous, and it's an event where more than 250 indigenous communities and the representatives are going to meet in India to discuss the challenges and also the potential that indigenous food communities face. So it's really, we also have a very strong network in South America. Yeah, it's really worldwide.
Yes, I believe I can understand that there is this very strong link between indigenous communities and biodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
That they still have, for example, animal breeds or...
Indeed. We're trying also very much to emphasize indigenous communities because traditional know-how and knowledge. Nowadays, scientific know-how is considered to be on a higher level than any other know-how. But what we are trying to convey, to communicate, is really that traditional know-how and scientific know-how should have a dialogue on the same level. I mean, knowledge that has been earned through centuries of experience and generations is very much valuable, as much as scientific knowledge. So one should not go without the other. And indigenous communities are certainly the best reflection of this traditional know-how.
Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose you have a kind of like national organizations, national slow food organizations. How did they come into being? I mean, did you actually go to other countries and create them, or did you find contact with similar groups that were already working around the same issue and drew them into the network?
Yeah, so there are some national associations, and they are in those countries where there is a sufficient number of members, so to say, so which always depends on the size of the country itself. And so it's the case, for instance, of Slow Food Italy, Germany, the Netherlands, there is a Slow Food Japan, South Korea, now there is a Greater China Association, and there is also Slow Food USA and Slow Food UK. And how it started, well, it depends from each country. But what we do also when we go and visit other countries where there is not yet a national association is that we first of all try to establish contacts indeed with people who are active in the same field, and then see together with them how the network in the first place could develop, because it's really a grassroots association. So what we do is that we invite people who are interested to become more and more active, and then to develop bit by bit the network.
So those are organizations that are functioning on a local or on a national level, and through Slow Food they tap into a kind of worldwide network then?
Indeed, indeed. In some cases it is local associations, but not necessarily. For example, again, to give you the example of Eddie Muchibi from Uganda, as I was saying, like there, it really started because he himself had started school gardens in his area. And we found out about his project, we met him, and through that, like, we, you know, we started discussing about the possibility of developing a Slow Food network, what would be the goal, what would be the idea, how it could work. And he took it from there himself, and with the associations he knew in collaboration with them at the local level, he really developed the network at national level. So yes, we are trying also very much to involve local associations that can then tap into an international network.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain again, or maybe I already asked, can you explain what the Terra Madre exactly is?
Yeah, so Terra Madre is, it's an Italian word, of course. It means in English Mother Earth. And it was an idea that took shape, so to say, in 2004. Because basically that's when we organized the first meeting of what we call the Terra Madre communities. So essentially of people who, through their daily work, they protect and promote the food system we like, so the good, clean, and fair food system. And what happened in 2004 is that we invited about 2,000 representatives from around the world to participate in this meeting that we organized in Turin, so in northern Italy, for 4 days to discuss about, you know, all the issues that we face when it comes to food and agriculture and fishing and farming and so on, with the idea of really building a network of people who are in a similar situation, exchange problems, but also exchange solutions. And so since back then, we organized every 2 years a gathering of this Terra Madre network, and it's very powerful because you have farmers from all around the globe, small-scale farmers, and also from communities or like farmers that have never traveled outside a small village, and they come to this meeting and they see thousands of other people who, like them, work every day for good, clean, and fair food, and they realize the importance of the work they do. They hear often for the first time that what they do is very important. And they go back with a lot more of enthusiasm and self-confidence and motivation and ideas to develop what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And now we also have a Terra Madre young people. We just organized it at the end of October in Italy. Also, there were 2,000 young farmers from around the globe. And that's become one of the most important parts of Slow Food, bringing the farmers in, bringing those who are really making sure we have our food on the plate together to discuss how to have a good, clean, fair food system.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say those people often come from very small villages. Isn't it very expensive for them to travel so far?
Indeed, indeed. There we have a concept, if you want, of the right to travel. Because if you have a meeting to discuss the future of food, you cannot just have a meeting with those who can afford the trip. So what we do for this big event is that for all the farmers from the Global South, Slow Food does fundraising activities and covers all the travel expenses. And so all the flights, the travel in Italy, accommodation and food, it's all paid for these delegates, for these representatives, because they need to be in the discussion, otherwise it wouldn't make sense. So yes, it is expensive, but we cover for the
Don't you work with things like Skype meetings?
Excuse me, if we don't work with?
I mean, if people can connect by the internet and have meetings with Skype, then they wouldn't need to travel, would they?
That's correct, but also often these farmers are coming from communities where there is not even Skype, and it would be difficult to organize a Skype conference for 2,000 people. So
yes, and then I suppose it's not only about the meetings themselves, but also about the networking in working in between the meetings.
Indeed, indeed. It's the whole networking. It's also, there are very specific work meetings, if you want, where we discuss about, for instance, women and land, or seeds and sovereignty, or, you know, fishing communities. So it is really something more than just them coming together to celebrate that they're doing a good job, but really to build on from there.
So another question that I always ask is, how are you funded? By selling food, maybe? I don't know.
No, we actually are a non-profit organization, so we're not selling things. We have part of our funds from the membership fees that members pay. So when you sign up to Glow Food, part of your funds go to the international office to finance the international project, and it remains with the local chapter to support the local activities. Then we do fundraising activities. We also apply for funds to the European Union. We ask for funds to foundations who support our work. We have very specific guidelines, so we are careful about not taking money from organizations who do the reverse of what we do, in a way. So
no, that would be a very easy way for greenwashing, yes?
Indeed. So that's a concern of ours. So there have even already been situations where we have sent the money back because it wasn't in line with the work we do, so it didn't make sense to us. So we have fundraising guidelines and we have a diversified fundraising strategy.
I was just asking because I saw that your website is on a .com website, which is normally for commercial.
No, it's just international version of the website, but it's not commercial because we're a non-profit. Yeah.
That's why I was just wondering if you maybe had some commercial activities.
No, the only commercial activity we have, but then it's not Glow Food International who runs that activity, but another branch of Glow Food. It's called Glow Food Editore, so it's a publishing house, and the publishing house can sell books. So we have a number of books that we publish about food-related topics. And then there is another part that is called, I say the name in Italian, but just for your information, it's called Slow Food Promozione. And they are the part of Slow Food that organize the international events. And there we have tickets, so people buy the tickets. But all the money earned is reinvested in the international projects. But as Slow Food International itself, we're a non-profit, so directly, we're not telling anything.
Okay, Marta, our time is already up.
Okay.
Thank you for your time on this Sunday.
And thank you very much for your call.
I will go on talking with your colleague afterwards. Do keep us posted.
Brilliant. Excellent. Have a good Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.